After losing my daughter in the Sandy Hook school tragedy, I made it my mission to help protect every school and every student every day. Each week, here on The Sound Off, we'll explore the biggest issues affecting school communities, from health, security, crisis prevention, and so much more. You'll hear from today's leading school safety experts to share their experiences, knowledge, and inspiration. Welcome to The Sound Off on School Safety with me, Michelle Gay, presented by Entrato.
You know, I used to work in the schools teaching special ed. And I just remember, you know, even like fire drills, they would tip us off ahead of time. They would say, we're going to do a fire drill, so get your crew ready. And so we basically wouldn't participate in the fire drills because we'd like leave the school early. So it wasn't really a fire drill for our kids because, you know, again, they had the sensory issues and it was essentially, at the time, it was the right thing for them to do. At the same time, are we preparing our kids for the fire that might happen, right? No.
Hello and welcome, everyone. For each episode, we bring you the leading experts and thought leaders to discuss the most pressing school safety issues with the intention of keeping our communities safe. But far too often, individuals with special needs and disabilities are left out of the school safety conversation. Today, we're speaking with Nick Savarese, Executive Director of the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism. He'll discuss how the organization helps people and families affected by autism. Plus, how staffing challenges in schools are impacting special needs programs, and later, why families of students with disabilities are joining the mask debate. Let's dive right in. Well, welcome, Nick Savarese from the Flutie Foundation. It is wonderful to have you here with us to talk all things safety and all things special kids.
Thanks, Michelle. Excited to be here. Appreciate the invite.
I know. We were just trying to track down the last time we were together virtually. And I think maybe a year ago we were doing something like this on your end, celebrating some exciting things that were going on with the foundation. So it's been too long.
I know. It has been too long. The time flies too fast. I believe it was our Facebook Live show, if I'm not mistaken. But it was it was great to talk to you then and great to see you again today as well.
Yeah. So I want to start with the foundation. Talk a little bit about who you are and what you do. It's such important work and it's been such a blessing for my family to be involved with the foundation. So I would just love our listeners to have that background.
Sure. So we're the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism, founded, I guess it was 23 years ago now, by former NFL and Heisman Trophy winning quarterback Doug Flutie and his wife Lori. Their son Dougie was diagnosed. Dougie's just turned 30 a few weeks ago, but you know, he was diagnosed with autism, I guess, probably 27 years ago. And they essentially, after a few years of kind of struggling to access care for Dougie themselves, thought to themselves, wow, you know, we have this platform. We have, you know, Doug was, you know, a celebrity of sorts, had some
fame.
He's
a big deal.
Yeah. Doug's a big deal, right? So, especially, you know, back then it was when he was in Buffalo, but also here in the Boston area. He's a local hero, having won the Heisman Trophy at Boston College. So, you know, again, they kind of saw this huge need. And this was back when autism didn't have the prevalence, didn't have the notoriety, for lack of a better term. And so they really saw a void that they could step into at that time as leaders, as sort of, just raising their hand and saying, hey, my child has autism. It's okay, right? That in and of itself was a big step back then, right? In fact, people still come up to Doug and Lori and sort of say thank you for that because, you know, I mean, Michelle, I'm sure you experienced a bit of this as well.
Yeah.
Just, you know, to identify that you have a child with autism, it's not always the most comfortable thing or what have you. So anyways, just that in and of itself, them raising their hand saying, we have a child, we know what it's like. That was a big step, but really they wanted to give back more. And so they founded the foundation, really solely focused on helping families, you know, find access to care, find access to supports, be able to afford supports and that sort of stuff. So that was, you know, 23 years ago. And, you know, the thing has just kept going and going. In fact, they never had big visions about it, but what ended up kind of taking it from what they thought was a little thing, basically Doug got a signing bonus with the Buffalo Bills. He signed a contract and got like, I don't know the exact amount. Maybe it was like $20,000. I don't exactly know, but that's what started the foundation. But then these things above my shoulder, Flutie Flakes, went huge, this cereal.
Yeah, it was like the original viral, you know?
I think they raised like $1 million off the bat, and that turned it into a real foundation. So ever since then, we've tried to just stay real core to our founding principles, which is, you know, helping families affected by autism, you know, navigate this journey basically and find the supports for them and, you know, their children and who are now adults and the organizations that support them. So we've just been, this is my long meandering answer. We can get into it a little more, but I'll just cut it there. That's basically the nexus of the foundation.
Yeah. And, you know, for us, our autism journey started, I want to say about the end of 2008, when our Josephine was diagnosed. And, you know, everybody has a different journey, and there are no two kids with autism that are the same. But to know that there's a community out there that can support you as a family, it really is everything, you know, as you were saying. So we have so much gratitude. So many people are just so grateful to what Doug and Lori have done and all of you at the team. It's just amazing. So, you know, when we were looking at what to do, people kept asking us, you know, immediately following Joey's passing, it was like, where do you want us to donate? What do you want us to do? And we were just trying to figure our way, and pretty lost. And a friend said, knowing that we were going to be moving to the Boston area, well, what about the Flutie Foundation, which we all just kind of call you the Flutie Foundation for
sure, of course,
right?
yeah, of course.
You know, and we were like, yeah, well, we've never really interacted with the foundation, but yeah, let's connect. And at the time, Lisa Borges was sure. Executive director, so we connected with her. And we just found this incredible place that we knew we could take those donations and say, do something amazing, help families. And so it was just a phenomenal connection and just absolutely the best home for Joey's fund. So the rest is kind of history, and, you know, we keep at it together. So.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And Joey's Fund is still a key integral part of the foundation's offerings, for lack of a better term. And I don't know, for the listeners who don't know, basically, or the watchers, I don't know if we're on...
Both, all of the
above. Got it. So, you know, we essentially, it's so core to our founding principles, but basically families, through Joey's Fund, which you all started in honor of your beautiful daughter, Josephine, we provide direct financial support to families who need it for autism-related expenses. So it could be anything from summer camp to, you know, safety things such as, you know, a fence in a backyard. You know, a lot of people with autism are prone to wandering. And so just to be able to put up a fence in a backyard or something like that, horseback riding lessons, iPads, you know, whatever a family needs, they can apply to us for funding to afford that. Because as you know, and as many, you know, there's studies out there and this sort of stuff, but, you know, they say that over the course of a lifetime, an autism diagnosis and caring for a loved one with autism could add anywhere from like $1.4 to $2 million in a lifetime of costs, right?
So easily, easily. I mean, you know, it's getting better and better over time. I mean, I can honestly not imagine how hard it was at the time of Dougie's diagnosis. But I know when Joey was diagnosed, it was like such a shock to realize how much would not be covered by insurance. I mean, basically nothing was covered by insurance. So that fence, obviously that's not going to be covered by insurance. The, you know, the swimming lessons, because she was very attracted to water. The horseback riding to help her regulate, you know, all of those things were really critical interventions for her. And we saw such great progress with those. Seeing some of the specialists that our families need to go to, none of that's covered, you know. So there's a lot of sacrifice that our families put in to caring for their loved ones. And it's just such a wonderful thing to be able to have a place to go to, have not only people that understand you, but, you know, but people that will help you find those resources.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been a great partnership. Now we've been able, oh gosh, I should have done some research, but we've just been able to help hundreds upon hundreds of families. I think hundreds of thousands of dollars, we've been able to distribute. And it's not about, we focus just on today, right? It's like just helping families today. We understand that there's great research needs out there in the autism space, and we're grateful for organizations that do research. We don't necessarily do that. We're grateful for advocacy organizations who advocate for things like insurance coverage. We do a little bit of that, but really we're about today. You need a fence, okay? You need to go to horseback riding lessons, or this organization needs a grant for job training, whatever it is. We're really kind of focused on just helping people
That's
today.
what drew us, that's what drew us to you, honestly, is just, so many families out there are just trying to get through today and get through it well. So that's where that immediate connection was for us. So, but a lot of the things that you rattled off and I did too, they're safety related. And so that, of course, is a just a wonderful natural crossover between the other legacy for Josephine, which is Safe and Sound Schools, and the foundation and Joey's Fund, with you guys. So, I think I shared a little bit with you about this new program that we have released called Especially Safe. We dedicated this in Joey's honor, and just released it. It just debuted at our National Summit on School Safety this year. But it's a wonderful program, also free, that we want to shout to the rooftops about and share with folks. It's about helping schools or any educational institution or community to prepare for and to teach and train individuals who may have special needs. So that covers kids like Joey, kids with autism, young adults with autism. That also covers, anybody who might set foot on the campus, whether it's a camp, whether it's a school, whether it's a religious education program. Our kids, our community has very special needs that need to be considered. And unfortunately, it was a big gap that we saw in the field. We saw that our kids were sort of an afterthought when it came to safety planning. Like, oh, well, they have a one-on-one. That
All right.
one-on-one will, they'll figure it out. They'll wing it in the moment. But, drills like fire drills, lockdown drills, duck and cover drills, all those things, those are so problematic for our community. There are so many sensory issues around those, communication issues, and just overall wellness issues, mental health issues that can be so problematic with those. So we created the program very much with those kiddos and adults that enter, our campuses and our institutions in mind. So, something we really are excited to share with you and our community at the Flutie Foundation and kind of shout to the rooftops.
Yeah, that's it. No, I heard about that a little bit ago, and super pleased to hear about that. It's funny you bring it. Not funny is the wrong word, but I used to work in the schools, teaching special ed. Around the turn of the century, I guess, like in the early
I know, I'm with
2000s,
you.
and I
I'm
just
with you.
remember, even like fire drills, that they would tip us off ahead of time. They would say,
Oh,
"Okay,
yeah.
we're gonna do a fire drill, so get your crew ready." And so we basically wouldn't participate in the fire drills because we'd like leave the school early. So it wasn't really a fire drill for our kids because, again, they had the sensory issues, and it was essentially at the time, it was the right thing for them to do, tell us so that, but at the same time, are we preparing our kids for the fire that might happen, right? No. And similarly, the types of drills and interventions that are happening now to train students that you all are working on and that sort of thing. Same deal. It's like, how do you appropriately train kids with autism and disabilities who might have these sensory issues?
Yeah.
So it's great to hear that you all are doing this, and we'd love to figure out a way to kind of partner with you on it.
Yeah, for sure. And we sort of took a two-prong approach. We the there are two guides, and we're developing the training modules now, but the one guide is about, kind of the grown-up side of things, the adults in the room or the building that need to do the planning and the preparation. And they need to plan for a wide array of different needs, right? Whether it's a child with autism or somebody who just broke their ankle. And as you know, and we've talked about this before, no two kids with autism are the same. And autism comes with all kinds of additional, diagnoses as well. And Josephine had like 10, right? So it's not like you can just say, well, okay, if we're all autistic kids, here's the script. Right. Here's what you're supposed to do, right? So we broke that planning and preparation into a framework that we call the TEAMS framework. So we want our schools and institutions to think about transportation needs, emotional, mental, and behavioral health needs, auxiliary communication, big for our kiddos, medical, and security and supervision. So you hear a lot of Josephine in there. Like, supervision is, you know, let's make sure they stay in the building and on the campus when things are crazy and hectic. Our kids are prone to wander, for example. Sure. So that's what that sort of TEAMS framework is. But then you mentioned, you know, how do we teach and train the kids? And so that teaching and training component comes with lessons and games and activities that we can use and customize for, you know, the special educator, the classroom teacher, the parents to really have the words and the activities and the social stories, all of those good things that we know can prepare our kids as best as possible. So yeah, we're great. Excited. Lots of synergy, lots that we can explore together. But let's talk a little bit more too about some of the initiatives that you have at the foundation that are devoted to safety, because you guys do some really cool stuff for families.
Yeah, sure. So, safety is one of our core kind of initiatives. Basically, we break the day into yeah. seven core functions at, you know, employment or school, right? When you wake mm-hmm. up, you go to school or work. Outside of school or work, active and social. And then at all times, people need to be safe, supported, and informed. So safety is kind of one of our core initiatives, so to speak. So we do a number of different things. Obviously, through a lot of our funds, whether it be Joey's Fund or our grant cycle, our year-end grant cycle, or a number of other initiatives, we'll do things like fences. We have a safety bracelet initiative, right? We're in partnership with police departments, GPS-enabled as well as radio frequency-enabled bracelets. So, again, if a child, you know, many people with autism, not all, but many are prone to wandering. And so it's, it's synced up to local police departments. So if someone does happen to wander, call goes into the police, you can be tracked, that sort of thing. There's also a GPS function where parents can do that. So things like that, swim lessons even, right? That's, mm-hmm.
It's big.
Yeah, it's big, right? Because, you know, literally, I think just not too long ago, you know, maybe a month or two ago, the next city over from where I live, there was a child with autism, a teenager, I believe, and he somehow got out of school, wandered into the woods, through, you know, somewhere, got to like this river and was like about to jump in the river and grace of God, it was near a manufacturing plant, and somebody who worked at the manufacturing plant happened to step outside at that moment, literally, I think, to smoke a cigarette, which, you know, is neither here nor there, right? But because this person stepped outside, saw this child like about to like jump in the river, and gosh knows what was going to happen, and ended up, you know, calling the police and rescuing the child. But like that sort of stuff, like that's an isolated incident, but it happens all the time.
It does.
So,
yeah.
So we're really trying to, we have partnerships with police departments, you know, throughout New England for the most part, but where, you know, we bring them together, convenings where they can share resources around how they work to keep their community safe. Because, you know, we have found that police departments want to help and they really want to keep their community safe, but they don't necessarily have the training around, you know, how to work with people with autism and that sort of stuff. So a number of partnerships we have with police departments. I think that's kind of, you know, I'm rambling a little bit here, but yeah, we have a number of things we do around safety for people and families.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people don't realize how important it is to connect our kids and families with law enforcement, emergency medical, fire, because they really do interact on a for some of our families, pretty frequent basis. So it's really important that the kids are, you know, comfortable with those trusted adults. One of my girlfriends I think of all the time, her little girl, you know, just she was a bolter, we would say, you know, she would wander off. And so she was just well known by the local PD. They all had a relationship. And when they would, you know, spot her, you know, there was a car seat for her in the back of the cruiser. Almost all cruisers have a car seat, come with that equipment. But, you know, the familiarity to be able to say, hey, it's, you know, we're going to go back home now. And so that there's not a struggle, you know, they have the communication tools. And so those types of programs are, I mean, there's just no way to put a value on that. It's amazing.
Yeah. And no, we have seen that. I mean, that's the thing that a lot of local police departments are doing. Just that is literally having community days, inviting families affected by autism and disabilities, just making, short of anything else, just any comprehensive training, tactical thing, is just making efforts to get to know all the families in their community as best they can who are affected by autism or disability. We've seen so much of that, especially increased tremendously over the last few years even. And to your point, it's just so there's familiarity on both sides. And that if a situation ever comes that escalates, you know, that just that knowledge and that familiarity could de-escalate a potentially tragic situation.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And I'll tell you, Josephine loved, they were heroes to her. So to see someone in uniform, you know, she would gravitate, and that was what we wanted, right? I have pictures of her climbing in the cruiser, you know, climbing on the fire truck. Those are happy experiences that she had in advance. Thankfully, we did not, you know, need thankfully any rescue.
Sure.
we were always able to catch her. But yeah, those things, they're just so valuable in the community. We're so grateful for the work that you do there.
No, appreciate that. And you know what? The other end of it is just peace of mind for parents, like the fence thing, right?
Oh.
So we talk about a fence, you know, being able to protect a child from bolting, but it's also like just this peace of mind for the parents, or just the ability, oh, the parents might be able to sit on the back deck now and, you know, eat dinner, have a glass of wine or something without, and watch their child play in the backyard, which is what, you know, I think many people just take for granted as a normal, typical function of parenthood and adulthood and family living. But, it, you know, so, but that's something that often kind of goes unnoticed in all the safety initiatives is the tension and stress that can be alleviated from parents knowing that whatever potential crisis, you know, is being averted.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how valuable that is. And I'm sure you hear it all the time, but you're absolutely right. To just be able to sit for a minute and know that your kid can just kind of have a little freedom. You don't have to be hovering over them all the time. Yeah. That's important for the child. That's important for the parents. It's important for the family. So it means everything. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I think we could talk all day about these things, so maybe we have you back for our next season. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the cool things that'll be happening in 2022. But anything else that you want to foreshadow for us? Anything exciting on the horizon?
Oh, we're always having exciting things at Flutie Foundation. I don't have anything in particular to foreshadow, other than, you know, it will be our 25th anniversary in 2023. So we expect big, you know, so we'll start ramping up for that here in 2022, and we'll continue to do all the work we've done in partnership with you and so many of our other great partners. But big things coming in 2023, and I am pleased to say that we did just announce, Doug and Lori did at our year-end Flutie Foundation Holiday Spectacular benefit concert, that this year, 2021, is the first time we hit the $1 million mark in terms of distribution. Direct investments into the autism community through grants, programs, you know, our initiatives, you know, Joey's Fund included. We topped the $1 million mark, and it's only going up from here. So that's an exciting thing for us. But yeah, more to come. And then last thing, this is all I had in purple is this checkered shirt. So
I love it. I love it.
I'm going in honor of Josephine. I'm rocking a purple checkered shirt today.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Well, we're so excited about what's to come. So excited to reconnect, sync back up, and share with our community all the good stuff going on at the foundation. And folks can visit. You want to give the website a little shout out to the website, and we'll put that as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah. FluteeFoundation.org, all one word, FLUTIE Foundation.org. And you can obviously find us on all the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. So,
you guys are rocking it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we have a lot of fun. We have a great team. They kill it. So, just trying to elevate voices of people with autism and spread the message and build a community.
Well, good stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. Very excited about what's to come. We'll just keep checking in with you. Love to Doug and Lori and Dougie and the family and the whole team at the foundation. I'll be up in Boston sometime this winter, so I promise.
Oh, good. Yeah, give us a call, please.
Yeah.
Great.
Good stuff. Well, happy holidays. Be well.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
You as well. Thanks, Michelle.
When it comes to school safety, our friends at Entrato School Messenger have school communities covered. They deliver advanced school safety solutions that lead to safer environments for our children. With over 40 years in public safety and more than 20 years in schools, Entrato School Messenger is uniquely positioned to serve your school safety needs. Entrato Safety Suite combines the most advanced emergency response management, on-campus notification, and parent communication tools together to create a 360-degree wall of protection against all kinds of school safety threats. To learn more, visit entrato.com/safety suite for education or check our show notes for the link. Well, now it's time for a segment we call the Sound Off, where we weigh in on some trending school safety stories. And today we're focusing on special needs. Leaders at Boston Public Schools say labor shortages are putting the district in a challenging position. There aren't enough teachers, and the students coming back to school need more than the standard services. The district's assistant superintendent, Ethan Burns, described the difficulties. He said Boston Public Schools has an obligation to meet special needs students' individualized education programs, or IEPs, which call for up to 20 hours of special skill building each week. However, they're not able to meet the requirement right now. And the situation isn't just a problem in Boston or in public schools. Special education private schools have also been struggling to fill positions. This issue often leaves existing staff spread thin, and some employees take on extra duties that can make them more vulnerable to burnout. Well, staffing for increasing numbers of special needs students and programs has long been a challenge in schools across the country, and well before the pandemic. In my own experience, very, very pre-pandemic, as a parent and an educator in four different states, on a good day, staffing for these programs was a challenge. I mean, let alone, you know, illnesses or schedule changes, weather, snow days, all of those things put a lot of wrinkles in our plans and preparations for special needs students and their programs. But meeting the legal obligations of student IEPs it's not just, you know, the right thing to do for students. It's, as we said, the law. An IEP is a legally binding document. It's a sort of roadmap of goals and services for each student with special needs. What I think we're staring down at this moment in the pandemic with new variants continually emerging and ever-changing protocols and data is our school communities are really challenged to find some kind of balance and a long-term plan of sustainable solutions. We know that these interruptions are going to continue for all of our students, and especially our special needs students, who are so much more impacted by these types of disruptions to their programming. So it's on all of us to come together and find sustainable solutions. Think outside of the box and look at ways that we can perhaps make long-term plans to make up for some of these lost opportunities for our students, because it is real for these students as well as all students across the country. And now let's end with a look on the bright side. Catherine Contreras doesn't have a disability, but some of her closest friends do. She was with two of them in a theater class at her Maryland high school when a fire drill began. While an educator led a student in a wheelchair outside, Catherine walked next to one of her friends, a student who lacks depth perception. When confronted by the steepness of the sidewalk and an uneven grassy field, her friend responded with screams of terror. Catherine also noticed that the challenging route required three people to push their classmate's wheelchair, along with many other safety concerns. The experience led the teen to spend her entire senior year researching, sending emails to officials, and speaking out at school board meetings. Catherine found that many of her county's 208 public schools were actually not in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, something she recognizes affects more than just students, but teachers, staff, and the general public, especially when schools serve as community hubs. The students' work led to plans to improve the fire evacuation route on her campus. Families of fellow students with disabilities said Catherine's call out was an enormous eye-opener. She now plans to study law and become a disability rights attorney. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you to our presenting sponsor, Intrado School Messenger, for supporting this podcast, and thank you for listening and supporting our mission. Until next time, stay safe, everybody. Stay safe and sound.